Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, I'm Alan Cumming, and welcome to My Shelves. My shelves are sort of a museum of my life. I like to keep things from my travels that are, to me anyway, the very essence of the experiences I've had. Sort of portals, if you will, to a specific time and place. And the inspiration for stories and memories and musings. Here is an oil painting done by my friend Tonka, who happens to be a chimp and who I'm trying to desperately get out of a horrible situation he's in Missouri and get him to safety and let him roam free again. Whoa, this is good. This is a wallet, but when you open it, flames come out. More on that later. And today I'm talking to my dear old friend, the painter David Renfrey.
I left a message on his thing, and then he rang back and he said, "I promised to do something for you and I can't remember what it is."
Welcome, bienvenue, welcome.
David Renfrey was born in Worthing in 1942. His family later moved to Hull, where he studied art and printmaking at the Hull College of Art. He currently lives and works in London, but I knew him when he lived at the Chelsea Hotel in New York City. He's probably best known for his large-scale watercolours of dancers and for the many drawings and watercolours he did of his neighbours and friends at the Hotel Chelsea. He lived there from 1995 to 2016. He was also commissioned by the fashion designer Stella McCartney to produce a series of drawings for the launch of her fashion house. He was elected a member of the Royal Watercolour Society in 1987. He was awarded an MBE for services to British art in America in 2001. He became a member of the Royal Academy of Arts. That means he's a Royal Academician. Academician, I find that very difficult to say. In 2006. And in 2016, he was appointed Professor of Drawing at the Royal Academy Schools. David's work is in museums and galleries and mines and homes. There's quite a few in my home, all over the world. And he is also, more importantly, an absolute darling of a man. I have many pictures and drawings by David on my shelves. It was actually very difficult to choose just one to talk to him about today, but I finally plumped on one. It's a little watercolour of me and my dog Honey that he gave me as a gift for a rather big birthday. So David, there's a couple of things that I could use, but there's one thing you gave me for my 40th birthday. It's a watercolour and it's of me and Honey, and it said, and you've written on it, "Now my dad's turned 40, will he still be flirty?" I love it. And because that was some time ago, as I'm about to turn 56. Can you imagine?
Surely not.
I know, it's incredible. I know it's hard to believe. But I was trying to think the first time we met, and I think we met... Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we met at a party that Glenda gave for... No?
That was the second time.
What was the first time?
The first time was we'd been to see you at the first place.
Oh, yeah. Yes. You came to see me in Cabaret. But yes.
We met up with Anna Free.
Ah, you came with Anna. And Anna was in Closer with Natasha Richardson, who had been in Cabaret.
That's right. Yes. And I was desperate to do a drawing of you. So I said that to Anna, and she marched over and said, you've got to do this or something like that. And you said yes. But I had no way of getting in touch with you until Glenda.
Right.
At this party.
Yes. So that was the party. I think that was early 2000. So I remember first sitting for you at the Chelsea Hotel, I think.
Yes, that's where you came. You didn't come to my first studio, which was on 26th Street.
And I remember it was, I just remember like the, I my idea of, actually every time I've sat for people, it's always been a different experience of what I imagined. But it was just, I remember it being so easy and fun, and you didn't have to sit still for very long, and it was great. But it was like sort of therapy. I remember telling you things that I thought, gosh.
It's quite good that, you know, you could really squeal. You could really hear
it. You get some juicy gossip.
Yeah, people do say such funny things. I did a portrait of Joan Rivers years and years ago, and then she's decided she wanted me to paint her with Melissa.
Oh yeah, her daughter.
And when I was doing it, I don't let anybody see anything. Anyway, Edgar and her came up behind, you know, said, "We just wanted to let you know that Melissa's going to have a procedure on her nose later in the year. And I wonder if you could, you know, do something about that in the paint."
What, preempt the portrait with the new nose?
Yes. I said, you know, there's not much I could do that. I could leave a little white triangle and let the plastic surgeon fill it in for you. And they both looked at each other and they said, "Oh yeah, of course, yes." And
oh,
she looked
my
great.
God.
She looked fantastic. You know, there was nothing wrong with her.
When did you move into the Chelsea Hotel?
In 1995.
And you came from London. You'd always lived in London. And then you just suddenly, what was it prompted you to go to New York?
What I was doing is I'd done a commission. Somebody saw the work and they said they'd love to give me a show, a gallery. Uh-huh. But they wanted me to paint the paintings in New York.
Oh, so you were sort of doing a spell
yeah,
there.
Yeah, so we set aside, I said, okay, we'll go for a year. But Caroline got her green card.
Ah, I see.
Because she's Irish.
Ah, right. The luck of the Irish. And so who is it? Molly Parkin and Richard Hughes, they were artists who lived there too, or they just knew about it?
No,
Patrick Hughes, sorry.
He moved there with Molly Parkin, then left her and lived with you probably know of her, Suzanne Barsh.
Oh,
the
yes.
The part.
I know Suzanne very well. Yeah, she was with Patrick Hughes.
Yeah, yeah, they lived together, you know, for a long time. In fact, she really regrets his leaving her for someone else.
And then she took up with David Barton, the gym mogul. And they were together. They had a child and everything, didn't they?
They did. He was a very sweet boy.
He is lovely. Yes, I met him when he was an adult. Because there's a movie about Suzanne. Have you seen it?
No.
It's so good. A documentary about her. And
well, I see it,
it's really good. It was on Netflix for ages. And Suzanne Barsh is this sort of party. She's German and she throws these amazing parties. And it kind of, to me, feels like what I imagine New York was like in the past, that everyone dresses up.
They were fantastic, weren't they?
Such fun. And so kind of like wacky and, you know, everyone really makes an effort. And it's very sort of loads of crazy makeup and gender fluid sort of things. And it's just like really exciting sort of, you know, glam, androgynous, sexy, everything.
I loved it.
I can imagine you would. Well, did you paint a lot of those people?
Yeah, of course I did. That my first exhibition was full of what we call gender fluid.
Yeah.
And I absolutely adored it. You know, they were so gorgeous.
It was such fun.
It would have been good for you because you lived on 14th Street for a while.
I did. I actually lived even near, when I first went to New York, I lived even nearer. I lived on Bethune Street, which was in the Meatpacking District. And I remember Bethune in the...
Bethune. Yeah, I know that one.
What's that place? It was all artist studios. I subletted an artist studio. Oh, the West Bay.
West Beth. I wanted one there.
Well, they're great. They were really, and also because some of them look onto the river. I loved that place. Also, it was the first time I ever lived in like you know, the idea of every like one big room. It was like a loft, and so it's that idea you could get out of your bed and walk to the kitchen, and you wouldn't go through any doors. I just thought that was magical.
I like the loo to be separate.
The loo was separate. Yes, yes. So what was it like when you first moved to the Chelsea? Was it still, what was the state of it at that point? And who was living there?
Oh, it was fantastic. It was truly fantastic. People that had lived there all, you know, for years, 50 years or more. There were three Weinsteins. It was actually Arnold Weinstein, was a great friend of playwright Marilyn Monroe's.
Arthur Miller.
Yeah.
So who was Arnold?
Arnold was a librettist and a musician. People like Dollar Brand, I don't know if you know of them, him.
What's, that sounds like a really, store.
Dollar Brand is a black musician from South Africa.
Aha.
Gorgeous man. Absolutely fantastic. I don't know. Quentin came there, but he came to the first studio quite a bit.
He wasn't living there?
No, he was living
in East Village.
Not far from where you, where you live.
Yeah, because it's funny, we're talking about Quentin Crisp, and he used to live in East Village, and I actually met him. I saw him a couple of times. Grant used to see him all the time. He used to help him across the road on Second Avenue. And there's a diner on Second Avenue that Quentin always used to go to. And Grant has a drawing of Quentin that he did. And he wrote down all the things that Quentin said during the lunch as he drew him. And it's so great. I was photographed by David LaChapelle for Interview Magazine. And David had an exhibition of photographs. And I was in it, and so was Quentin. And they were all quite risque pictures. I'd done some very risque ones for him. And actually, the one that he had in the exhibition was fairly tame. But there were some quite nutty ones with Amanda Lepore and all those sorts of types of people.
Lovely.
Yes. And anyway, I was outside having a cigarette, and Quentin came out, and I was introduced to him. I remember being like, you know, when you meet someone like that who sort of, even then he seemed like from another time. Another era. He was such a legend and such a sort of, it's almost, they don't seem real almost. It's almost like watching a movie and it's actually a real person. And I was like, oh gosh, how nice to meet you. And he said to me, because he went, it seems you and I are the only people with our clothes on.
Oh,
so good.
I met, because he was the naked civil servant, and years and years ago in London, I got a job teaching a night class, you know, of drawing, and I had an exercise book, and it had a roster of models with their phone numbers, and I got through this name, Quentin Crisp came up, so I rang him up, and he came along, and he struck the most absurd heroic pose, and I thought,
what's that, a Grecian sort of thing?
Yes, exactly, with his posing pouch only, and a sort of, as if he was holding a spear or something, and I said, yeah, let's see you hold that, mate. I was thinking, but he held it for an hour without flinching.
Wow.
But we came pals. I saw him much later. I said, I'd like to draw you, and he said, yeah. He said, well, I'm going to New York, he said. So I am in New York now. So, but my name's in the telephone book. So ring me when you get there. And I thought, yeah, that's a kiss off. But it actually it was in the phone book, and I rang him up and I left a message on his thing, and then he rang back and he said, I promised to do something for you, and I can't remember what it is.
Oh, you could have got anything, David.
Well, I'm not sure, Alan. And the fee for sitting was to take him for lunch. That was it, and provide transportation. So I took him to that little diner on the 11th. Is it 11th? And there was a piano player called B. Lyons there, and she was playing these American standards. And she came over to the table. She's a sweet little woman. She said, "Have you any requests?" And he said, "Yes, I'd rather you didn't play."
Oh, that's fantastic. I think I've seen the picture you did of him.
I did a lot, but yeah.
But you did a lot. And there's a very big one. I think it was one, because that was the thing. I remember the first time coming to sit for you, going into your studio, and there was all these sort of paintings stacked up.
And there was like John Gielgud, Quentin Crisp. It's kind of a little intimidating.
You know, both those people hated the word gay. Both of them liked the word queer or used the word queer. And it was at that point, it was hard to get used to that because it wasn't in vogue, if you know what I mean.
Which wasn't? Queer?
Well, queer. Queer was definitely a pejorative word.
And why do you think they liked it more than gay?
I think to them it was more real. I think it's what they felt about themselves too.
Right. I like queer. I mean, I say queer. I mean, queer is different now. It's got a different connotation. It's got a sort of a more of an umbrella sort of feeling to it. And I think what's interesting about queer is it doesn't just refer to your sexuality either. It's more about an attitude and an aesthetic. I like that too.
Me too. I totally agree. I think it's a real insult to be called straight.
It is. It's a real. It's really.
It's a real downer. I mean,
big downer. Yeah, it's so hilarious, isn't it? Talking of John Gielgud and queer, did I ever tell you that story? I hope it's not apocryphal because that sort of means that it's not true. But it's a story that goes around in the theatre that, and I think he's a fascinating person because you know, he was arrested a couple of times for cottaging, for having sex in public toilets, and it was really interesting. His career, I read recently that the second. Well, one of the times it happened, he was in a play and he wanted to resign from the play and blah, blah, blah. Or they wanted him to resign from the play. And he walked on stage that next night after it had gone in the papers and he got a standing ovation. And I think that's a really interesting sort of, you know, in the 50s, I guess, this the sort of turn of the tide about acceptance and the way that, you know, the sort of iniquities of the people's sexualities, the iniquities of the laws of sexuality was seen. But so there was this thing where he was, at the Royal Court, and this is someone's, you know, relayed this story and it's done the rounds, and I just so hope it's true. Because he's at the Royal Court doing a play, and the stage manager came in, knocked on the door, went, you know, oh, Mr. Gielgud, it's your half hour call. And they opened the door, and there was John Gielgud giving a blowjob to like a tattooed skinhead. And he was saying, come in my face, you filthy craw. And I hope that's true. There's just so much to unpack there. We could do a whole episode about that.
It may be a niche audience,
it's just like the idea that he's saying this to the person.
Of course,
that
of
is,
course.
I mean, that it's just a lot is going on. And
he did say that he absolutely loved being in Caligula because he had to dive into a pool full of naked boys.
and get
paid for it.
Where did you paint him?
I painted him in the studio that I'm sitting in now, and also I went quite a lot of times to his house, and he used to come for his sittings, and his chauffeur would wait outside, or his driver, not a chauffeur, wait outside while he told me stories. Basically, he said at the end of it, near the end of it, he said, are you queer? And I said, I felt really guilty and about it. And I said, I'm afraid not, Sir John. He said, no, I didn't think so. But
just testing the water, though, just in case. Oh, bless him.
Yeah.
And what sort of time was that? I mean, in terms of...
1983,
right.
And it was for the National Portrait Gallery. I think he wanted me to make him look younger, which...
Oh, did you?
No, I didn't. He said he didn't want to sit in the interview afterwards. He said, I didn't want to sit for the artist at first, but the boy won me over.
Oh, nice. You were like, oh, I wish I had made him younger now. Oh, I love that.
Hello there, this is my friend Joe.
Hi.
Now, Joe plays rugby for England.
Yeah, what's your point? Come on.
Well, Joe presents a podcast and it's my firm belief that you should listen to it.
Very interesting.
And here's why. Because it's not actually a rugby podcast because, well, let's face it, there's billions of them already.
No. It's about you, the listener, and the jobs you do. If you're a teacher, an astronaut, a tree surgeon or a chef, then we've got loads of questions for you.
The Joe Marler Show, because everyone is interesting if you ask the right questions.
That's a great line. That is a very good line from you, Tom.
Thank you, Joe. You want to find it? Search for The Joe Marler Show in your podcast app.
Because everyone is interesting if you ask the right questions.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tell me more about the Chelsea. I'm really intrigued about how...
I met this fabulous actor there, Alan Cumming.
Still a charmer.
That was great, actually. Those times were really lovely.
So loved it. It was so... I always think it was such a... I think it was probably after one of my... breakups, and it, you know, when I started sitting for you the first time, and it was so nice to just chat about stuff. And, yeah, and you just kind of, you know, find yourself telling someone, and then you get to really know. I guess that's where we really forged our deep friendship, because it was like, yeah, you are being very intimate. It's a very intimate thing, isn't it? Painting someone, and you make it really intimate because you allow people to speak.
Yeah, I do not pass on stories, although here I am telling you about Gilgud. I count the demise of a sitter as a license.
I think that's fair.
Spill.
Fair enough. Yes. When I die, tell everything, David.
When I die, you can tell everything. You had a tattoo, and you had a dilemma because you didn't know what to do about it, and we were thinking how you could change it.
Yes, I had a tattoo of someone's name on my body, a relationship which I'm ashamed to say only lasted in its entirety 4.5 months. And I had this tattoo done after 2 weeks, and it was on my groin. And what was you had a really good idea. What was, because it was, his name was Raven, and so I had Raven.
I thought you should put Dun Raven.
I forgot that one. Yeah,
we came up with a few things. I think.
But eventually I got it just removed by laser, and that part of my. Life was gone. I'm up here right now in our house in the Catskills, and you and Caroline came to visit many times over the years, and we would always sort of, you know, have these drunken sing-song dancey evenings. It was such fun. It wasn't till years later you told me that you used to get up quite early. We would all still be asleep, and you and Honey, my dog, would sort of hang out. And that's why you had all these, when you did your dog exhibition called We Think the World of You, and it was a book and it was an exhibition of people with their dogs.
Yeah.
You said you had all these sketches and things of her because you'd spent all those times alone with her in the mornings while we were all still snoring off our hangovers.
Well, I had a hangover too, but it was too good to waste up there. So I got up when it, and Honey was, she was glorious in the morning because it was like her domain, and she would sort of, she must have woken up because she used to bark sometimes. She just thought it was great to bark.
Yes. I was used to it. So there's this beautiful picture that you did of Honey and I sitting on a sofa that's upstairs. That, and it's also like the one that I referenced in the beginning, the birthday, which is a birthday card you gave me that was a little painting. And there's another one I've got of another one of Honey and I actually. What I love that you do is that they're watercolors, big watercolors, but you don't color it all in.
I'm cheap.
But I think it's so great that you just, like, in the one on my card, like, Honey is beautifully colored in, but I'm not. And then there's other bits, like some of my skin is colored in, but it's other, and then the sofa the rug is in.
Oh,
is,
yes,
is
colored. Yeah.
And I love that you leave this not blank space, but what do you call it? The opposite space, the
negative space, or
negative
it is.
Space. Yes, it's just I've never seen that done in watercolors before.
I think the negative space is negative. I think it's part of
no,
really. But that the one you referred to is called the blue chair. But at the end, I didn't put any color on it. So.
That's right. Yeah, that's that. I'm lying on these blue cushions, but you wouldn't know. I love that. But it's also really interesting because it makes you invite you encourage the viewer to look at the coloured bit first. So you have this sort of interesting experience looking at a painting because you're drawn to something and then you realise there's this whole other bit that you haven't... I just think that's a really clever thing to do.
It makes your eye travel, which I quite like to happen. You sat for me to start with, and you didn't have Honey. And one day you turned up with Honey because Whitney had given you Honey.
Yes, yes, that's right. She was fostering Honey from volunteering for a rescue place. And she'd took Honey for a couple of nights and told me about her. And it was such a funny thing because I didn't want a dog. I didn't think I was going to want a dog. And all of a sudden I just said, I'm going to get this dog. And she was mental as well. She was such a mental dog when I first got her. And had a big yellow stripe of, a big yellow stripe of paint along her side. And did I ever tell you? So she was obviously abused. And there was things because it took a long time to, I mean, you know that thing some people say you just smother someone or something with love and it will blossom. It's true.
It
took a lot of love, a lot of love. Because she was used to have these crazy fits and I had this trainer and she would say to me, okay, what you have to do is just when she goes nuts like that and has this fit and is biting and everything, you just pin her down and like lie on top of her and have your hand on top of her paws and sort of spread eagle her until she, and she's going to start trying to bite at your hand and totally trying to get away from it. I'm just all my weight on top of her and you just have to wait for her to calm down. And then you could always tell when she was about to be ready to be let go because she would just go, like she would release it and then she'd be fine. But it was so crazy that years later, I remember being out, I would call it a date, but there wasn't much precursor to the actual engagement, if you see what I mean. And this boy said to me, I think I saw you about 6 months ago. I went, oh, really? He goes, over in Chelsea. I went, oh, yes, that's where I live. And he went, you were kind of lying on top of a dog on one of the piers. I was like, oh, yes, that was me. So embarrassing. Who's your, I mean, obviously this is a difficult question, but aside from me, who's your favorite person to have painted? I mean, is it the stories they tell or is the painting that comes out? I mean, is it the experience or the end product with you?
It's really hard because I get such a kick out of it. I like people. In fact, I love people. And it's you get to know more about human beings and yourself. But, you know, and it's hard. I don't know about favourite.
Yeah, it's a dopey question.
Well, it's not a dopey question. It's just not a very answerable one. if you exclude yourself.
I do, yes, of course. Natch.
Because we talk a lot. But I do talk a lot to other people. I used to paint these pretty pictures. I went through this when I was ill years ago, painting these pretty pictures. And young women would sit for me and children. And I got this such a lovely message from somebody who was in her 30s or 40s, say on my answering machine in New York, saying, "I just want to thank you because when I was a kid, you used to draw me and I used to tell you everything and I was terribly unhappy and you just listened to me wittering on and it made such a difference to me. And I felt so safe. And I honestly wept.
David, that's lovely. I bet. That's what I think of you. That's what I think of you, actually. I've sat for you at times in my life when what really crazy, nutty, not very nice things were going on. And it was just a chance to I did feel safe and I did feel sort of heard as well and just had the space to just blurt it all out. And then you would say something and it'd be really fascinating. And you are like a therapist in a way, an art therapist. And so I'm so glad it's not just me. And I love that. And so she painted, you did that when she was a little girl, then you came to paint her again when she was older.
I painted lots of pictures of her when she was a child. And then later on, I painted her when she was pregnant. You know, I don't know if she's married, but she had a boyfriend she was living with and she had two children.
David, this is absolutely great. I just think it's so lovely to be able to talk to you about, you know, things that I have on the walls and the shelves here that are that are beautiful things that I can look at, but also they have memories, great memories for me. And also I can talk to the person who made the things as well. It's just like this memory sort of train. And it's just been so lovely to talk to you.
It's been really a treat to talk to you. So thanks.
And my pleasure. And please, as soon as I die, tell everything that I said to you in this.
and vice versa.
All right, my darling. You take care.
Lots of love.
Lots of love. Talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
Well, I'm going to put my watercolour of Honey and I back on my shelves. I hope you've enjoyed this lovely, illuminating, hilarious, tender jaunt down memory lane with David Renfrey. And I hope you'll join me next time for Alan Cumming Shelves. Alan Cumming Shelves is hosted by me, Alan Cumming, and produced by the lovely Jack Claremont. We are part of the Acast Creator Network and the Crowd Network too. We just love networks. Another Crowd Network podcast to check out is Unaccountable. It's a podcast fighting for police accountability in the United States. It's a podcast that tells the stories of innocent people who've been killed by the police, just like George Floyd, but also people like Mohamed Muhaimin, Shacey House, and Carrie Illich. And so many more you haven't heard about, but you really should have. The stories can be difficult to listen to, but this could be the most important podcast you'll ever hear. It's a podcast fighting for change, and we need to join that fight. Just search for Unaccountable in your podcast app now.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.